Hello, my name is Lily, and today I will be reading the Dorchester Reporter. Today is February 20th, 2026, and we're starting off with this article that was published yesterday on February 19th, titled Last Call for Now at the Dot Tavern. The Dot Tavern, a popular gathering spot for young adults since reopening under new ownership in 2023, after a 7-year hiatus, turned off its taps and locked its doors for the last time on Wednesday night, February 18th, as the building's owner prepares to sell the 3-story property at 840 Dorchester Ave. The bar's manager and part owner, Megan Driscoll, announced the sudden closure via an Instagram post last Friday. Driscoll, who has been the youthful face of the tavern in recent years, called it a, quote, difficult decision, but the right one for the long-term success of the Dot and me, personally. On Wednesday, the final night included a 7 p.m. toast that packed a house of mainly 20-something regulars and a line out the door. Inside, the building owner, Doug George, told the reporter it was time for a change. Quote, it's time to turn it over, he said. I'm selling the building, the business, and I'm not in the hospitality business. I'm in the real estate business. Megan's done a wonderful job. She's run the place, and she's done a lot. A real community was created here. As patrons sipped on mixed drinks like the Happy Jack and Bittersweet Blues, as well as cold beers and spiked seltzer, George said he hoped the bar might reopen with a new owner. Quote, I don't know what's going to happen. I hope it becomes very much the same, said George. It's turnkey. Someone could come in and operate it and open tomorrow. Someone else might decide they want to come in and do something a little different. We'll see what happens in the next 6 to 8 weeks. Among the crowd were roommates Reagan Patterson, Emma Lewandowski, and Haley Tulin, who moved from Franklin to Dorchester 3 years ago and quickly made the Dot their spot. Quote, we moved in when they were opening up, and now we are here when they're closing, said 24-year-old Patterson, who would like to see the bar reopen as soon as possible. Quote, I don't want anything to change, added Lewandowski, who celebrated her 24th birthday at the bar last year. Along with Tulin, the girls sipped on wine and reminisced about the fun times they've had thanks to the bar, including weekday outings for Wednesday trivia night and a Friendsgiving crashed by a Dot Tavern bouncer. Nearby, James Trentos took over a booth with a group of about 10, quote, heartbroken friends, some of whom went as far as to call out of work for the last night on Dot Ave. Quote, we live a block away. This is like our living room, Trentos told the reporter. We come here all the time. We come here to watch football, to relax when the house is stressful or whatever. Honest to God, it's like our living room. The 25-year-old said that the Dot Tavern is the first place he's become a regular, happy to drink whatever the bar is serving up for $3 that night. Other customers, like Mike Follin, said they've been coming to the bar for decades. Follin told the reporter that the Dot was the first pub he went to after moving to the U.S. from Spittal, County Galway. He even did some work at the bar, joking that the walls he painted look bad when you first walk in, but get better with each drink. Jake Colson said he first came to the bar for the cheap drinks and pizza, but stayed for the people. Best staff in Boston, Colson, 27, proudly proclaimed. His friend, Brennan Reed, quickly agreed, adding that the joint was a great place for residents to meet up and hang out, whether that be after a long day of work or on the weekend. Billy Drummond, 27, put his feelings about closing simply, devastated, referring to the bar as his home away from home for the last few years. The staff seemed to feel much the same. Bartender Iman Ali, 21, started working at the Dot when she was just 18. Having spent the last few years growing up behind the bar, Ali said that the people standing beside her and sitting on the stools in front of her have become her family. Quote, I love everyone here, the UMass student said in an interview with the reporter. Everyone. My customers. I love my customers so much. At 8 p.m., Brandon Wahlberg, nephew of Dorchester-born actor Mark Wahlberg, started up the last trivia game. The past couple of years I've hosted trivia here, but that actually started from sitting here with a friend of mine. Meg said, "You're funny. Do you want to do trivia here?" "The rest is history," Wahlberg said with a smile. He continued, quote, "I hope they reopen. It's a neighborhood bar feel. Not many places around here still have that." After the first round of questions, Wahlberg passed the mic to Driscoll, who wore a jacket with Rosie the Riveter and "We Can Do It" on the back. The bar quickly went quiet. I wasn't sure how to start this because summing up 3 years of your life into a few minutes is definitely not easy to do, especially when it was not an ordinary 3 years at all, Driscoll said, standing behind the DJ booth. "This place changed me, made me stronger, made me more compassionate for people, and brought out a younger side of me, a much less jaded version of myself that I didn't realize was in there." She added that working in the industry, quote, "You meet every kind of person, every walk of life, and every kind of personality, and you realize that underneath it all, people really just want connection. They want someone to remember their name, care about how their day was, and, to put it simply, they want you to remember the details." With the crowd that showed up last night and the support displayed online, it's clear that Driscoll didn't just remember the details, she cared about them too. Today she will bring that same attitude to Fenway, where she is beginning a new journey at Loretta's Last Call. Quote, "I'll be starting there bartending and then hopefully will ease myself into their marketing team," said Driscoll. In the meantime, she said she hopes to help George find a buyer or investor for the Dot. Quote, "I would like to keep it the same, but give it the love and renovations it deserves," she said. "Dot Tavern deserves some TLC. This next article is written by the State House News Service, published on February 18th, titled, "Leaders Call for New Four-Pronged Mass and CAS Approach." This is written by Sam Drysdale for the State House News Service. South End leaders proposed Wednesday a tougher, tightly coordinated plan to confront drug use and homelessness at Boston's long-troubled Massachusetts and CAS intersection, or Mass and CAS intersection. Gathered at the Hampton Inn on Mass Ave, members of the South End / Roxbury / Newmarket Working Group on Addiction and Recovery said their recommendations aim to knit together systems of public health, public safety, and the courts. Quote, "The status quo is not acceptable," said Representative John Moran, a South End Democrat. "Over the past years, residents of the South End, Roxbury, Newmarket, and across our neighborhoods have experienced a visible rise in congregate outdoor drug use, especially in the spring and summer months. The reality has carried serious consequences, public health risks, a strain on services, and impacts on neighborhood safety, including break-ins and other crimes. The framework, requested by Mayor Michelle Wu last summer, builds on the city's recent enforcement push at the intersection of Mass Ave and Melny Cass Boulevard, where officials say the police presence has been heightened and outreach teams have moved hundreds of people into treatment since September. Four pillars of recommendations. Boston City Councilor John Fitzgerald, who chairs the Council's Committee on Public Health, Homelessness, and Recovery, outlined four primary recommendations. 1. Expand and make permanent the Boston Police Department's Neighborhood Engagement Safety Team, or NEST. 2. Expand and make permanent the Co-Response Outreach Recovery Engagement, or CORE, team with bolstered case management. 3. Establish a specialty court focused on pre-arraignment diversion. And 4. Support long-term housing and short-term sober living options. "That's the meat and potatoes," Fitzgerald said. The NEST unit works alongside clinicians and recovery coaches, including individuals with lived experience. The core team would serve as the front door of the system, engaging people who are using drugs outdoors. These teams are already on the streets, often offering people a choice: enter treatment or face the justice system. Kelly Young, director of the city's coordinated response team, said the approach may look harsh from the outside, but functions differently on the ground. Quote, "We work alongside law enforcement, and from the outside it may look, being on the inside is very different," Young said. "I've had numerous people like Oliver come back to us and say, quote, it may not be the way we want it to go, but thank God we went that way. I couldn't make a decision for myself." Oliver D'Agostino, 37, told his own story at the press conference, describing years living outdoors near Mass and Cass while struggling with addiction and cycling in and out of detox before finally entering sustained recovery with the help of the city's outreach workers. Young said since September 15th, the CRT has placed, quote, close to 480 people in inpatient substance use treatment. Quote, "We have not turned a single person away that's wanted treatment," she added. The working group is made up of community leaders, including those within the New Market Business Improvement District and South End Forum. Morin, Fitzgerald, and Young have met with the community group over the past 6 months since Wu requested they develop recommendations for a new approach at Mass and Cass. Asked whether she supports the program, Mayor Michelle Wu said in a statement, quote, "Alongside partners in community, public health, and across government, Boston is working to ensure strong pathways into recovery and quality of life in every neighborhood, including an end to outdoor substance use. I thank the working group for carefully reflecting the shared progress of the many city departments engaged in our coordinated response team, for their strong endorsement of the Boston Police Department NEST initiative, and for highlighting more opportunities to meet our shared goals. The city is focused on active preparations for warmer weather and continuing to engage with all stakeholders on our coordinated approach. A specialty court to complete the cycle. The most novel element of the recommendations is the proposed specialty court, which would centralize cases involving people repeatedly arrested for drug-related offenses at Mass and Cass and divert them into treatment before traditional arraignment. Quote, "We want to call it specialty court, and ultimately the core of this work is diversion," Young said. "We want people to be diverted into the treatment and the help that they need." The goal, Young said, is, quote, "more of a centralized system for these people that we're seeing over and over again, because most of them, or a lot of them, I should say, are already involved with the judicial system. So we want to leverage that to increase the likelihood that they will stay on the pathway to recovery." Working Group Chair Stephen Fox described the approach as a long-sought integration of previously disconnected systems. Quote, "We believe that we have found a magic sauce," Fox said. "Being able to use public safety, public health, and judicial initiatives together in an integrated fashion." Fox pointed to retired judge Kathleen Coffey's homelessness specialty court held at Pine Street Inn as proof of concept. Quote, "That's why we're saying that we need to have that component at the judicial piece in order to complete the cycle," he said. "So recovery at the front end, public safety all through, and then judicial initiatives and judicial reform within it." You are going to get clean. While speakers emphasized compassion Wednesday, they also made clear the plan would place clearer boundaries around open drug use at Mass and Cass. Sue Sullivan, executive director of the New Market Business Improvement District, framed the plan as a balance between recovery and neighborhood safety. Quote, "There are those who would say that what we are doing, pushing people to try to choose recovery, doesn't work," Sullivan said. "Some would say that when individuals are incentivized to go into recovery, 50% will fail and they will be more vulnerable when they come back out on the street. The reality is that, on the streets, 0% are getting better, and many overdose daily. We cannot stand by and continue to let this happen. She argued that pairing long-term case management with removing people from the street-level drug activity will, quote, will work to improve the quality of life for everyone. Fitzgerald was even more direct about the cultural shift he hopes to see. Quote, if you are coming to Mass and Cass, if you are coming to the South End, you are going to get clean, right? He said. It might not be the first time we see you, maybe not the second time, but at some point, if you keep coming down here, you are going to end up on the road to recovery. D'Agostino, on Wednesday, recounted his first encounter with CRT workers. Quote, at the time, I was convinced they were undercover cops disguised as parking authorities, he said. I was suspicious, but when I asked around, the other guys said, no, that's Erica. She's from CRT. She's cool. The word cool was the foundation of trust that eventually saved my life. He described relapsing after years of sobriety and living, quote, like a piece of cattle, on a bike path near a Boston water and sewer facility. Quote, they respected the line. They knew if they pushed too hard, I'd be gone, he said. When I decided to finally pull the trigger and ask for help, Tommy was right there. He got me into detox time and time again. After a brain bleed landed him in the hospital, D'Agostino said CRT staff showed up repeatedly. Quote, that was the turning point, he said. I realized these strangers care more about me than I cared about myself. It was time to hold myself accountable. Budget and state role. Pressed on the cost of recommendations, Moran acknowledged the group does not yet have a precise estimate. Major expenses include expanding the teams on the street, establishing the specialty court, quote, it needs to be bespoke to what we need, he said, and investing in short-term sober housing, quote, 2 months, for example, 150 people. Those are the building blocks, he said. Moran noted he sits on the House Ways and Means Committee as lawmakers begin work on the fiscal year 2027 budget. The committee's budget is expected in April. Quote, we're going to have to do this quickly, but we have the building blocks. We just need to figure out a better concept of those hard dollars, he said. He said state leaders, including the governor and attorney general, have copies of the plan and emphasized that the state invests a lot in Mass and Cass. Fitzgerald said he has pushed to explore a more regional response, acknowledging that many individuals at Mass and Cass are not Boston residents. Quote, there is a need to be a good neighbor and ask for that approach, he said. This next article is written by Kelly Broder, titled Burst Pipe in UMass Boston Dorm Leaves 600-plus Students Searching for Refuge. Waterlogged belongings, makeshift beds, and unresolved frustration defined this past week for students on UMass Boston's Columbia Point campus who say the administration has not done enough to support the more than 600 of them students who were displayed after a 10th floor pipe burst in the East Residence Hall a week ago, Monday, on February 9th. Quote, I feel like I'm begging, you know, said freshman Yaramar Oropeza. I'm begging for crumbs. Roughly 50 rooms were affected by water damage, but the now broken fire suppression system is keeping students in all rooms from returning, university officials said. The burst forced residents, mostly freshmen and transfer students, to evacuate and seek alternative housing. The university has offered all students in East Residence Hall on UMass Amherst's Charles River campus in Newton a roughly 30-minute drive from Columbia Point and a more than 2-hour trip on public transit. Some 130 students are now being housed at the Charles River campus, while others, said Karen Ferrer-Muniz, the Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs, are living in the Doubletree Hotel on Mount Vernon Street, which is about a 15-minute walk from the campus center. Many more students are staying with friends in UMass Boston's West Residence Hall, have gone home, or have found housing elsewhere. For Oropeza, the past week has been exhausting. As a second-floor resident on the opposite side of East Residence Hall from where the flooding took place, she was offered housing at the Charles River campus, but she said students there did not have bedding, towels, or anything more than what they brought with them when they were evacuated. Quote, "We thought it'd only be like 10 minutes, Oropeza said of the fire alarm evacuation. Later in the evening, officials from UMass Boston purchased bedding from a nearby Target, but not enough for all the students at the Newton campus. Quote, "Other people just slept using their backpacks as a pillow and their coats as a blanket," she said. Oropeza noted that she has stayed at 3 different places since the pipe burst: the Charles River campus, a friend's West Residence Hall dorm, and with her boyfriend in Cambridge. Students at the Charles River campus say laundry facilities are not easily accessible and that staying there and keeping up with the schoolwork is difficult. UMass Boston shuttles are going between the two campuses starting at 6:45 a.m. and continuing every hour until the last one leaves the UMass Boston campus center at 10 p.m., the residence hall support page on the school site says. The school has also partnered with Uber to transport students cost-free to and from the University Station shopping mall in Westwood from the Newton campus. Students on campus have banded together to support their dormless peers by hosting a clothing and essential items drive. The evacuees, who were offered $1,000 from an emergency relief fund, according to Ferrer Muniz, were allowed back to their rooms on Wednesday, February 11th, to retrieve essential items like clothing and medication. They were then asked to move out the remainder of their belongings on Friday when they came back to find tables full of free clothing, toiletries, and water bottles, and Saturday afternoon. In an email to students last Friday, the university said it would provide moving trucks to transport student belongings to nearby short-term storage units. Eli Hotch-Keppel, a junior, said they offered their own clothes to their friends who were affected, quote, "But once I got permission to have a larger space, I started asking other people for donations. It really blew up," they said. Hotch-Keppel said they feel that support organizations like U-Access and the Office of Student Leadership and Community Engagement have done more for students than the school administration. Added Oropeza, quote, "These students, they're really the heart of UMass Boston, because they really, really have been supporting one another through all of this." Students have been using Yik Yak, a social media app that allows users within a roughly 5-mile radius to post anonymous messages, share resources, and discuss the residence hall situation. To share resources. The first floor dining commons reopened last Wednesday morning for regular meal hours, but the remaining residential floors will stay closed while flood remediation crews work to restore the damaged rooms. State inspectors are coming, quote, "in and out constantly to assess things," said Ferrer Muniz. She noted that flood remediation crews are working through, quote, "different stages of restoration," and that there is no definitive timeline for when the building or certain floors might reopen. Students should contact university officials if they need help, she said. Quote, "Instead of wondering, please come in and talk to one of us. We want to see them. We want to help them. We want to talk to them." This next article is written by the reporter staff, published on February 18th, titled, "Former Adams Village American Legion Post Slated to be Replaced by 5-Story Condo Building." A South Boston developer has filed plans to replace the vacant old Dorchester American Legion post at Gallivan Boulevard and Adams Street in Dorchester with a 5-story, 24-unit condo building with ground floor commercial space and 10 parking spaces in a garage. In his filing with the Boston Planning Department, Douglas Douglas Keach says four of the units would be sold as affordable to people making between 80% and 100% of the Boston area median income. Keach and two partners bought the Post for $1.8 million in 2024, originally with the idea of putting up an apartment building for seniors. The commercial space would be aimed at, quote, neighborhoods serving commercial uses, such as small shops, cafes, or professional services, according to the filing, which adds, quote, the proposed new construction is consistent with ongoing reinvestment and redevelopment trends along Gallivan Boulevard, where underutilized or aging properties are being replaced or upgraded to support contemporary housing and commercial needs. Recent projects in the area demonstrate a shift toward mixed-use development that strengthens the corridor's economic vitality while preserving the character of surrounding residential neighborhoods. In this context, the proposed project represents a compatible and logistical evolution of the block, reinforcing Gallivan Boulevard's role as an active mixed-use corridor while respecting the prevailing urban fabric of Dorchester. And with that, that is about all the time that we have for today's, or this week's reading of the Dorchester Reporter. Thank you so much for listening to the Talking Information Center, and I really hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.